Hi, welcome to Church of the Beloved's weekly sermon podcast. My name is John Kim, and I serve as the production manager here at COTB. This week's message is brought to us by Elder Jeremy Lai, preaching from James chapter 5, verses 7 to 11.
My name is Katz, and today I'm going to be reading from James chapter 5, verses 7 to 11. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. This is the word of the Lord.
All righty. Good morning, church. All right. So, for those who don't know, my name is Jeremy, and I help out here at our church from time to time. If you're new with us here today, today we continue our series on James, and the series is titled Not Just Hearers, right? It's about doing. Our previous kind of messages have been about how to not play favorites, right? How to not judge, how to control the tongue, how to not be comfortable in riches and luxury and money and stuff like that. So it's been a lot of doing, right? What to do, what not to do. But as you all kind of know, doing is kind of hard, right? And the famous words of actress and comedian Ali Wong, right? Sometimes you don't want to lean in. You want to lie down, right? Our energy goes up and down. We burn out sometimes, right? Doing is not easy. And why do we bother? So the goal today is to talk about why James tells us to be patient. I don't know about you, but I am not particularly patient. You know, and I think our world doesn't really teach or preach patience. You think about TikToks for entertainment, right? Or Reels for us millennials. You think about ChatGPT for learning and for whatever tasks you don't really want to do. You think about two-day shipping and Amazon Prime. We want to go, go, go. We want what's easy. We want what's quick. Yet we also know to a degree, right? We're taught and we learn that patience is a virtue. So how do we reconcile these two things? How do we be patient, especially in our faith and our daily lives? And so the two words I have for us today, to kind of focus on for the rest of this morning, are perspective and practice. Perspective and practice. But let's pray real quick as we get started here. Dear Father, today, we just thank you so much for the time you've given us today to meditate on your word, to learn from you. May our hearts be open to what you have to say for us today. Jesus, we pray. All right, so let's start off with verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. I think every time we see a therefore in the Bible, you have to think about what is it there for? Right? This message is not for those of us who are suffering losing streaks in league or missed out on the latest whatever tech shoe fashion drop. You missed out on the Lala tickets. It's not about that. Right? Think about last week's sermon. Pastor Derek preached about warnings to the rich, to people who cheat and commit fraud and murder for their comforts. Right? James rebukes those causing oppression, causing injustice. And now he turns to those who are enduring, or trying to at least. And there's quite a contrast that's being drawn here about how to live. James is also probably telling us how to not seek out riches and comfort as a response to hard times, as a response to enduring or trying to escape from what's difficult. Right, this passage is about persecution and trials, the times in our lives that are truly hard and wear on our souls. And it's possible it's under the rich oppressors like we talked about last week. But remember James' greater context here, his audience. Right, remember James' audience is primarily a Jewish Christian community. They exist in an empire of wealth and oppression. Rome, like any empire, right, didn't become the way it did through kumbaya and group therapy. Jews and Christians alike suffered. They were looked down upon as minorities with weird monotheistic beliefs and behaviors and practices, behaviors that were contrary to society's norms. You think about it, right? Everything we've gone through in this James series is pretty antithetical or contrary to what the norms were at the time. Norms like playing favorites, loving money and luxury, judgment over mercy, self over others and empathy, power over love. Sound familiar? Secular empire is alive and well. So James' teachings here are a reminder for his audience and for us to stick with it, to stick with these instructions, to do what is right, continue to do so, even and especially when it's hard, or even when it's because of what we believe and what we do. And I do want to acknowledge, right, it can be tricky sometimes to find that line between what is real suffering and what is inconvenience, right? And I'm not up here to make judgments about what you're going through. That's for kind of you to discern, and we can discern together as a church outside of Sunday service. But I do want to make a point that there is a difference between what is suffering and what is inconvenience. And that shouldn't be a super hot take. And I also want to acknowledge that sometimes our suffering and things we go through seem kind of arbitrary, random, undeserved even. Because the bottom line is that we all go through tough times, difficult trials. But James has advice for us here. And his first instruction is to be patient. And then duration of that instruction is until the coming of the Lord. That sounds hard, right? So it sounds hard to me because we don't know how long that will be, right? The Bible says, whether it's in Matthew, Revelations, we don't really know when this is coming. But again, perspective and practice. Verse 7 continues, "See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains." So our first perspective is consider the farmer. Might take some imagination, right? None of us have worked on a farm, I presume. But this idea of early and late rain, this would have been pretty well-known imagery. In Deuteronomy 11:14, it says, "He will give the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the later rain, that you may gather in your grain and your wine and your oil." Jeremiah 5:24, "They do not say in their hearts, 'Let us fear the Lord our God who gives the rain in its season, the autumn rain and the spring rain, and keeps for us the weeks appointed for the harvest.'" In Joel 2:23, "Be glad, O children of Zion, and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given the early rain for your vindication. He has poured down for you abundant rain, the early and the later rain as before." You needed this early rain to soften up the ground after a long dry season. If you have hard ground, you can't plow it, you can't sow it, you can't plant your seeds. There's no food. So the perspective here with the early rain is think about what God has done for you in your past that prepared you for the moments of today. What do you see in hindsight? What are some of the early rains that he's given to you? Now for me, like I never thought I would be on stage doing this, right? This is crazy. When I was little, I was like, I was painfully shy, I was nerdy, I was quiet, like, you know, the thought of speaking on stage would have sent me running to my room crying. Still does sometimes, honestly. Plus, not many people know this, but when I was little, I had quite a stutter. I hated reading aloud in class because I knew that when it came to my turn, I would inevitably trip on some word, and it was embarrassing. Even now, there are still some words that I know that my brain will trip on, and I have to like kind of like work my way around it mentally. And I think part of the reason why I talk so fast is because that's how I kind of overcame the stutter. It's just like, you just talk fast enough, you kind of get over it, you know, you overpower it. And all this to say is that, you know, my mom, I think, knew this growing up, you know, that I was kind of shy and didn't want to talk in front of people. And so she put me in like speech and debate classes, which I'm sure some of you have gone through too. In high school, my friend challenged me to run for student office, which obviously entailed being on stage speaking for the whole school. And if you're, you know, those of you in medicine, you guys know you're always forced to present, right? Whether it's early on rounds or for research or whatever, you're always up there. You have to speak. You have to be up there, prepare things, and overcome that stage fright. And so God sent a lot of rains early in my life to somehow lead me to be on up here and not freak out, you know, not stutter too much. It's all God, right? And that's that early rain perspective. The late rain is a rain that actually matured the harvest that the farmers needed to increase yield, to get more from what they've done, the work they've done. So the perspective there is think about what blessings God has brought to you late in a moment in your life that transformed you. Rachel is one of our members here today. We're sending her off later as she graduated med school this week. And she's been a great part of our church here. She co-led women's ministry, has been part of our CGs. But did you know that she almost didn't make it here? God gave her a spot off the wait list super late in the process. And Yufan, we sent off last week, also graduated this week from Feinberg. He also got off really late off the wait list, like, I think like end of June, and medical school started in July. So you never know what God's gonna do, and how much have we been blessed by Rachel being here? Her specifically being here for his kingdom, how much have us been impacted by her presence, her friendship, her service? Now, as an aside, she's also a doctor, right? So maybe you're getting some kind of early or late rain right now. Maybe both. Do you have that perspective? Because for the farmer, right, ideally the farmer got both the early and the late rains to get the best harvest. The farmer has to trust that these rains will come year after year. Again, we live in a world that has a lot of food, right? I think some estimates show that we waste like a third or throw away a third of the food we make. So maybe we don't really understand what it's like to be dependent on this cycle, to think about our livelihood or you know, just what we can eat, being dependent on things that are out of our control. But the farmer knows that their work is not enough, that there is a bigger picture that is necessary, yet beyond their ability. Right? We don't think about that kind of stuff. But we do have a lot to trust in God with anyway, right? Our career, our health, family, society. Do we see that there is so, so much that is not in our control, that we need the rains that God provides, that he does provide, even when we doubt or worry that he won't? But this perspective also requires, as the analogy here shows, as James says, consistent action. It's not enough to just trust. The farmer still has to work year in, year out. The crops don't plant themselves. So part of being patient is the consistency in doing what we can and in trusting the rains to come, that God will come through time and time again. Do you see this in your own lives? Do you honor God in acting and in waiting, in doing and in trusting, day after day, week after week, year after year? Now, I'm not saying that's easy. I know it's hard. But in one short sentence, James has already painted a deep picture of what it means to be patient. Consider this kind of patience. Patience that is reflective of the work that has been done, that will be done, that needs to be done. Patience in the uncertainty of circumstances and outcomes. Patience in what is not in our control. Patience in action and in what God provides. Patience in hope. Because that's what James is telling us to do, to be patient until the coming of the Lord. In verse 8, you also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Coming of the Lord appears twice in the first two verses. What kind of perspective do we get from this phrase? The word coming here in Greek is parousia, or to be with or to be alongside. That's a literal translation. But it was often used in the context of awaiting someone coming, like the arrival of a king, for example. And the phrase at hand here is egizo, which means close, but not quite here. How differently do you live if something is close, but not quite here? You know it's coming. Sometimes it's negative, right? Like senioritis. You know the end of the school year is coming. You know the end of this job period is coming. So what do? Slack off a little bit. Let things slide. Sometimes it's positive. You think about the arrival of a new baby, right? You physically prepare a space. You mentally prepare yourself to not sleep as much. You get ready for something exciting coming. But you change your behavior for that. Something maybe a little bit of both. We had a couple of weddings recently. Our brides looked great, right? I'm sure there was some little bit of dieting, a little bit of body image stuff going on, and the photos look amazing. But it's also a bit of like, well, why are we catering to these society norms of beauty and whatever, right? Like, I'm sure, like, I'm pretty sure, like, if these women didn't do the extreme things they did, they probably look just as good, just as gorgeous, right? But the point is that when you expect something close, something is egizo or at hand, your behavior changes, your attitude changes, your ability to tolerate, your ability to endure, that changes too. The practice of our belief should change as we think about that. Do you live your life as if God, Jesus, our Lord, is at hand? Because if you do believe that the parousia of Jesus is at hand, then it's probably at least a little bit easier to endure whatever hard thing you're going through. I think elsewhere in the Bible, a different disciple says something kind of similar. 2 Peter 3:11-13. What sort of people ought you to be in lives of holiness and godliness, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn? But according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Verse 12 again, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God. The NIV reads, as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. Do you guys see the practice implication there? The implication that here is that what we do when we live in holiness and godliness, when we follow the instructions of James and the Bible, that may directly impact the parousia, the coming of Christ in his kingdom. Right? The farmer acted and waited. And similarly here, Peter talks about waiting for and hastening, being patient and doing, so that our waiting and doing may help bring about this new heaven, this new earth, a new kingdom without suffering, without injustice. Right? Because who doesn't want that? What better perspective for our practice of patience? Remember, James says the farmer is waiting for precious fruit. Do we live as if there is something precious coming? That something precious is at hand? Do we live as if what we do helps lead to that fruit, that coming, that parousia? As an important side note, I do want to make a note that personal piety alone is not enough. Ideally, the patient practice of our faith should lead to us being witnesses of the gospel and showing that love to others. You can't just sit at home and just be like, oh, I'm being great. Verse 9, do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. There's pretty clear perspective and practice here, right, with each other. Don't grumble, or in some translations, don't complain. Seems easy enough, right? But let's return to the phrase that James starts with, be patient. The Greek here for this is makrothumio. Other parts of the Bible is the kind of the word used for slow to anger, or to have a long temper. Right, this is key because this implies a degree of self-restraint. There's an active nature to this. It's not just passively waiting when you're going through something hard. Not just being like, oh, whatever, you know? There's an active self-control in the waiting, in the being patient during what is hard. Because let's be honest, right? When things are hard, what's our natural reaction? It's interesting, especially here with James calls out not grumbling against one another. Clearly, some people in his audience are grumbling against one another, they're fighting or something. In light of their oppression and persecution, they're arguing with each other. Now, maybe, as Pastor Derek said last week, maybe some of these brothers here are doing the rich oppressing. And you think that's right for them to be complaining against each other about that. Right? Maybe there's some suspicions, a personal dislike, they're arguing. But also, how often when we are emotionally off, when we're tired or burned out, do we lash out at those around us? You ever been tired and hungry, hangry? You ever snap out at someone next to you because your dinner was delayed by an hour? Or you missed one snack? Right? I'm at fault too, okay? Like when I'm on call and I get my fourth call in the middle of the night, I am not patient or kind. Very short-tempered. Something I need to work on. But our reaction to hard times reflects how we think of ourselves and of God. A short temper reflects usually a desire for our own control. Impatience, complaining, is fundamentally a self-centered perspective, a denial of God's perspective. As Paul says in Philippians 2:14, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. That's a hard verse. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. All things. Because I do think our world, the default state is to complain. So let's not make it our default state too. And I think it's interesting that James also says then, so that you may not be judged. This is a very clear and stark reminder that grumbling and complaining is bad. Grumbling and complaining against each other is worthy of God's judgment. James goes on to say that a judge is standing at the door. Different kind of reference to the coming of God, right? Earlier talked about the farmer and kind of like the positive sense of getting rain. But here it's a little negative. I know it can be a little bit hard for us to hear that the idea that our bad practices can have consequences. But we do have a choice in how we set up our reactions to those hard times, those difficult times when we are suffering. Is our perspective one that leads to selfish grumbling and impatience because focus on ourselves? Or do we hold on to a perspective of God's coming? Should we expect, because of what we do, should we expect rain or fire? But again, James and us today, we're not dismissing our suffering. And James, to address this reality and how to be patient, he turns to a different perspective, one of history in the Old Testament. In verse 10, as an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. There are a lot of prophets, so we're not going to go through all of them. But consider a few of them here. Jeremiah, he was shackled, imprisoned, thrown into a muddy well. Daniel, we know Daniel in the lion's den, but he was threatened with death multiple times. He faced injustice and conspiracy for just trying to pray every day. Elijah was obedient and literally won a showdown with pagan priests. And then he had to go run for his life and hid in a cave. Hosea endured an unfaithful prostitute wife. I mean, go on and on, right? All these stories show incredible macrothumio, right? Long temper, slow to anger. Remember, James' audience, they would have known all these stories by heart already, and yet they still needed a reminder. There's another reminder for us of the relevance of the Old Testament, that we don't ignore that half of the Bible. James goes on to say, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. Remain steadfast is also translated as endured, which is kind of what we're talking about today. Jesus mentions this multiple times in the Gospels. Matthew 24:13, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. But consider the prophets again. None of them actually lived to see Jesus and the fulfillment of God's promise for his people. Take it back to James' farmer analogy, right? The prophets working, being obedient, being patient. But Daniel prophesies about the coming of Jesus. It didn't happen until 500 years later. Isaiah had the most prophecies about Jesus' coming. Probably about 700 years between Isaiah and the coming of Jesus. Elijah, probably about a millennia of time. So remaining steadfast, enduring is hard, because what if, like the prophets, we don't see what we're enduring for in our lifetimes? But James continues in verse 11, you have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. Now, Job itself could be a whole sermon series, right? So we don't want to get into details of it, but I'm focused here on this idea of you have seen the purpose of the Lord. Purpose here is also can translate as outcome. James references the story of Job and then references specifically the purpose and outcome for a reason, right? To show that the outcome of Job's incredible patience through real and significant suffering. And in many ways, Job's suffering was pretty unjust, as we might see it. He didn't deserve it. It just kind of happened to him. And it was terrible. He didn't deserve that. And aren't there times that we feel like Job? What's happening to us just seems kind of, why? But God restored Job. Job and his story remind us that what we go through, no matter how unjust it may seem, is for a greater purpose. To remind us that, like the farmer, that God is ultimately in control, not us. That should give us perspective that no matter what we're going through, it's going to be okay. More than okay even, right? Job, the end of Job, 42:10. It says, and the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. And unlike the prophets, we've already seen the purpose and the outcome. We've already been given Jesus. Our perspective should be a little bit different, right? Because we have the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelations. We've seen how the Lord is compassionate and merciful in the Jesus story, the whole Bible story. So this passage, this letter from James, is about how we patiently endure hard times, hard trials, and how to rearrange our perspective so that we can gain that endurance to get through these things. Hebrews 10:36, "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised." So how do we do that? Again, as an aside, I do want to reference last week's passage again, sermon again. That was really good. And I also think it's pretty applicable to just our congregation here. Remember, Pastor Derek talked about, you know, not being rich oppressors, not looking at leaning on luxury and comfort and money. Because I do think some of us probably fall into the camp of being the rich oppressors more than being victims of injustice. Right? I just want to, you know, I don't think we should lie to ourselves, right? I think it applies to a lot of us who work in healthcare and finance, consulting, trading, software. How many of us seek to escape our trials through comfort and luxury? Don't be a reason or a cause or contributor to injustice. Don't be the reason someone else needs this passage today. But for the inevitable trials that we do face, that we all kind of go through, how do we endure? So for the application, I think, you know, about perspective and practice, these are not new words for us, right? This is not some new concept, right? Society tells us about mindfulness and meditation, journaling and gratitude, and these are good things. They can help, certainly. But I think one simple application for getting perspective and a practice as well is simply prayer and every day. Give thanks to God for what he's done for you that day. One of the first things I go through with anyone I disciple is how to pray with this and start your prayers with this kind of gratitude. It's kind of a miniature version of remembering the prophets that James tells us to do. Because even in our hardest days, our hardest times, we can usually find something to be thankful for, something to be hopeful for. We can rearrange our perspective a little bit by finding those things. Maybe it's as simple as, God, thank you for the dinner I had, the clothes on my back, the air that I breathe. And second, we got to read and know the scripture and God's story front to back. James can reference the prophets because he knows his, the audience will understand the reference and intuitively understand it. But is that true for us today? Because frankly, the entire New Testament is loaded with Old Testament references. It's constantly looking back at that text. And I think one of the major failings of our modern Western church is that we don't do that. We forget that context, we forget that referencing, and we kind of like pick and choose literally phrases from the New Testament and make a broad proclamation about it. Do we know the Bible well enough in its entirety so that God's story and perspective is rooted in our minds and our hearts above our own perspective? Praying, reflecting, finding gratitude, knowing scripture and God's story well. This helps us build that long temper so that we know that our lives belong to God and not ourselves. And the key here is to do this consistently, every day, like the farmer. Pray, reflect, read, do, as James has been telling us this whole sermon series, day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. And there's going to be times that it's hard. Right? We have a lot of new runners at our church, right? David, our worship leader, he just ran 7 miles for the first time last week. Sarang, one of our members here, one of our ICU nurses, I remember, during wintertime, I ran with her on her first mile ever. It was really slow. But, yesterday she ran her first 10K. And it was faster than, you know, in our first run. Just in the span of a few months, right? I don't think Sarah O is here today. She ran her first half last month. Chris Guo ran his first marathon last fall in Chicago. Josh is somewhere here, right? He went from not running at all like 4 years ago. I think last in Valencia, he ran a 3:08 marathon. And then this in April, Josh ran a 1:26 half, right? For those who don't run, you guys don't know what the numbers mean. It's insanely fast, okay? But runners know, there is no cheating towards achieving your running goals. You can't cheat your way to those times. You have to put in the work, day in, day out, week in, week out. And you're gonna have bad days, bad weeks, or even bad years. But when you show up anyway, you still gain endurance. You still gain strength. It's that consistency that matters more than any good or bad workout. Spiritually, it's the same. Consistency is no different when it comes to spiritual practices. Sometimes all you can do when things are hard is just show up. But God will see you in that. He'll still build you up in that when you just show up. And critically, you do this with people, because community provides accountability, helps with our practice. You guys who exercise or work out, do anything together, you know it's easier when you do it with other people. Community also gives perspective, shows what is possible. Because when we're going through hard times, it's really easy to get lost in that hazy tunnel vision of self and defeat and pain. We forget what God has done for us and for others. And so we need others, whether it's loved ones, friends, therapists, pastors. And critically, I hope that our church is one that helps each other to see how God is working, how we are not alone in our difficulties. Hopefully you can look around as you meet people, you know people here, get plugged in. You see that in others. You see that in how Yuji faithfully serves every week and still raises 3 boys. You can see that in our Marys, Mary Howard, Mary Nguyen. They work crazy jobs. You guys didn't know. They work crazy hours, crazy jobs, and yet they show up consistently, helping with church life, setting things like our fellowship lunch today afterwards. Do you see it in, is Ine around? Ine somewhere around, right? Ine is a surgical fellow in training, is pregnant, does worship team leading, and is a deacon, right? All these people are inspirational. And when you see that around in our community, it makes the work, it makes showing up a little bit easier. You have the perspective of what is possible. And look, there are going to be seasons of your life where you can't do as much, and that's okay. But show up anyway. Do what little you can do. In the next phase of life, when things are a little bit easier, when the rains have come for you, you can do a little more. You know, Pastor Derek's not here today because Day is sick, but you should hear his story about how he became a pastor. Like, a musical theater major, now the pastor of this mostly Asian church in Chicago. Wild. And when we need perspective, when we need an example, who better look to than Jesus? Right? How did Jesus endure his suffering, his circumstance? Because none of us here endured anything beyond what he endured. Matthew 27:46. And about the 9th hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani." That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? If you grew up in church, you know this well. You know these are some of Jesus' last words as he hangs on the cross, suffocating to death. But did you also know these are the opening lines to a psalm? Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. Yet you are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel. In you our fathers trusted, they trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried and were rescued. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. Remember, we read the Bible with chapters and numbers and nice sections. Jesus' audience wouldn't have had that. They would have known the Psalms by their opening lines, right? There's no Bible app, no BibleGateway.com. They would have heard this and been like, oh, I know that Psalm. They would have known what Jesus was referencing while he hung there on the cross, that Jesus was still teaching. He was enduring in his Father's will up to and including his death. We don't have time to read the whole psalm, but this psalm is about endurance and about waiting for the coming, the parousia of the Lord. It starts with, my God, why have you forsaken me? These words that we are so familiar with. And it ends with, in 27:31, all the ends of the earth shall remember and turn to the Lord. All the families of the nation shall worship before you. For kingship belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. All the prosperous of the earth eat and worship. Before him shall bow all who go down to the dust, even the one who could not keep himself alive. Posterity shall serve him. It shall be told of the Lord to the coming generation. They shall come and proclaim his righteousness to a people yet unborn, that he has done it. Our God endured mockery, taunting by the people he came to help. Our God died a horrific death for us, and at his death, his words and his spirit endured and continued to teach. He reminded us to acknowledge our sufferings, to acknowledge our hardships, but to remember who is ultimately in charge and who is coming again. When we need perspective for patience, for endurance through whatever we're going through, what other story and example do we need?
Thanks for tuning in to this week's COTB podcast. For more information or to connect with us online, you can find us at cotb.life.